Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is poet, translator, and writer of fiction and nonfiction, Forrest Gander. And we're talking about his new book, Mojave Ghost. Forrest, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Thanks so much, Mark. I'm pleased to talk to you.
Now, how would you describe this book to a person who knew nothing about you? It's not really simply a book of poetry.
No, it's sort of a journey.
Yeah.
Sort of a spiritual journey in the wake of the deaths of my mother and my wife, the great poet C.D. Wright. And I'm walking along the fault line of the San Andreas fault, which runs the length of California for about 800 miles, with a new immigrant to this country. But I'm carrying my grief and my ghosts with me.
I was really deeply moved by the imagery and your language. You know, I've been with somebody, my wife, we're both into natural history. But we've been together now for 45 years. So you're starting to look at, like, at some point, one of us is going to pass on. And you're talking about the sort of imagery and the going back in time and remembering all these things. It really, really touched me because of that. Why did you choose the San Andreas Fault to walk along? I think that's a great idea.
Well, I have a degree in geology, so I'm very interested in what it is we stand on, both literally and ethically. and because it's here, I'm living in California. It seemed like the thought occurred to this new immigrant to this country, Ashwini Bhatt, with whom I was beginning a relationship, and she grew up in India, and so had really no idea what it would mean to walk along the San Andreas Fault, and as a way of, I think, trying to prod me out of my moroseness, she suggested it, and I said yes, but I think she had no idea what it meant. maybe a lot of people who haven't been out to a fault zone also would imagine that we're following a ravine all the way down California, but it's not like that. It's mostly hidden. You walk for or hike for many hours without seeing much of anything. And then you see little details. And because I'm a geologist, I'm trained to look for those. So it became a series of like station stops, like walking the stations of the cross for a secular person.
One of the things you write about, or maybe I just imagine this, by you studying geology, you get a very sort of, you get hold of the concept of deep time. And so walking along a fault line like that is, you're looking at your immediate past, but you're also looking at a huge, a phenomena that goes way back into deep time. You're also, unfortunately, looking at the future of California.
That's right, you are. And that's what, of course it should have been apparent to me from the start, but it wasn't until we really began this journey that I came to see the connection between the past that was upwelling in me. You said you've been in a relationship for 45 years, and that means that your whole sense of being is really a collaboration with somebody else, and all of your memories matter to you because they're shared with somebody, right? That's
exactly right. There's a quote in your book, if I can quote you for a minute. Isn't it often in our most intimate relations that we come to realize that our identity, all identity, is combinatory?
Yeah, that's what I came to realize, that I was a construction of other people and relationships. And when that major one was taken away, that it really cut me loose from how I knew myself and felt myself as whole or not whole. And walking the fault line, you see the past, literally the past is upwelling from underneath,
right,
that deep, deep time past. And the present is being buried as well. And I've felt that happening within myself. I'm walking in a present where I may be starting a new relationship with someone, but that past is coming up inside of me. And the two begin to blend together,
yep,
and I feel like I start to address a you that's both the landscape and the beloved.
It's an amazingly deep book, and beautifully written too. Now, you were born in the Mojave. Talk about your relationship as you grew up with your mother.
So I was raised along with my two younger sisters by my mother. My father wasn't around even from the beginning. My memories of him are few. And so my relationship with my mom was really tight. And in fact, it wasn't until I got to college that I was really around men very much. And then it was completely shocking to me because I didn't know how men thought.
Yep.
I had no idea what they were talking about. So it was very close to my mother, and I was her first child, and in some ways her experimental child, because her marriage was breaking up. She's living in the desert. She's got this first baby, and she would leave me in the crib and take walks just to get air around the Mojave. And we lived close to a fantastic geosyncline called Rainbow Basin.
Yeah.
And which is just colorful and full of fossils, the past up constantly. And she would she was really marked by those experiences by the time that we lived there, and always talked about it. And so I was in love with the desert before I could even really walk on my own.
You have a real passion for deserts too, and you've been to the Gobi, the Sahara, the Atacama, the Thar, and the Chihuahua. What is it that hits you as a poetic artist or in a writer about deserts that really resonates with you?
It's it's the same thing. Just every culture that's lived near a desert has a tradition of people going into the desert seeking vision, because the desert is one of the few places that shows the least signs of human imposition, and it overwhelms people. You become very small in the desert, and your movement seems to slow down. You don't seem to be moving at all, though you're walking for hours. And that sun, there's nowhere to hide from it. So it's very humbling, and your sense of ego diminishes. And once you really put yourself there, you realize that the desert isn't an empty place at all. And so your senses are drawn out in ways that are unexpected.
And it's a lot of people achieve enlightenment in the desert.
I'm not sure I'm going to ever achieve enlightenment.
Good answer. Good answer. That's the answer you're supposed to. That's the answer you're supposed to give.
Yeah, I've had insight, but I don't know about enlightenment.
Yeah, no, if anybody says they've achieved enlightenment, walk the other way.
Yeah. That's a nice thing. If you meet the Buddha, kill him.
That's exactly right. Now, Your mother died in the pandemic in 2021. Did she die of COVID?
She died of complications from from bad care, actually.
Yep.
She had Alzheimer's. She broke her hip, fell and broke her hip during the pandemic. So she was in a hospital where we couldn't visit her, and she had no idea what she was doing there. She was in great pain. Everyone was in masks. So she...
Oh, it's frightening.
It was just, like a Twilight Zone episode.
Twilight Zone episode. She's having cognitive difficulties. And then she can't see the person she loves.
No, they can't.
It's so cruel.
We would look in through the window to see her. Yeah.
Wow. And talk to me about C.D. Wright.
C.D. Wright is the great poet of our generation. I think there are a few who compare with her, and a lot of other people feel the same way. There's just a new edition of her poems out called The Essential C.D. Wright. But she was a poet who really explored both lyric poetry, but also was at the forefront of what's now come to be called documentary poetry, writing about ethical concerns with prisons and racism and war and politics. And so her work is really moving and really idiosyncratic because she grew up in Arkansas and had, she was like a fifth generation hillbilly. And she had this great vernacular vocabulary and a terrific knowledge of natural plants and trees. And she was just never uninteresting or uninterested.
Throughout the course of this poem or this writing, is you trying to figure out where you are and where the both of you were, and where's yourself now? And so many lines are just so much about yearning. You have a line, I borrowed my brightness from her, where is it now? And you read things like that as a person, as a reader, and it is so moving. And I totally sort of get that. I understand what you're going through. It's a very moving piece. Could I ask you to read a section from here?
Sure. Yeah. Did you have a page in mind, or?
I thought the whole thing was sort of one big long journey that I went on. So
it's true. It is.
Yeah. And so I don't want to presume where to start. I have the book right in front of me.
Okay. Well, I can read. I've got a poem. How about the one on 33?
Okay. Well, let me just turn there. Oh yeah. Okay. I have a lot of underlinings there.
So as you say, and just for the audience, it's really just one long poem, and they're just separated by asterisks, which for me are like the kind of first stars of evening that float above each poem, like something you'd make a wish on. So this is from the desert, from Mojave Ghost. Summer roadrunners patrol the mesquite and brown barrel cacti, snatching grasshoppers out of the air as you rub the sunblind from your eyes. What to say of the pastel chromaticism of these Mojave sunsets? Here, as everywhere, when you go still, what has disappeared comes forward. Ya me cayó el veinte, and you, an earthbound sun, a radiance. When we return to our car parked on the laterite verge of the road, I distract you from noticing the dead bird melted into a gruel, its eyes glazed with clusters of fly eggs. Only when we reach the edges of experience do we begin to intuit the more than this. Mm. Who will contradict me if I say you were and you are? We drive deeper into the desert, arguing about whether it's possible to love without reservations. When we stop for gas in Barstow, where I was born, A boy offers to let you hold the horned toad he is gently stroking in the direction of its spines.
Wow. That one of the other things about your writing is it's so visual and so captures the natural history of the place too. Like, you really feel the desert reading this, the Mojave, and all the animal life too. The first time I visited the Mojave, I've only been twice. I was amazed by the area. I had never been to a desert before. So that was my...
Yeah, but you were already a lover of lizards, though. And
that was the reason I went there for reptiles and birds. And and the amazing thing is we would drive these real sandy roads at night looking for snakes. And I can tell you, the first time I saw a sidewinder move, that was like an epiphany, because that was, I knew how it moved. I read about it. But until you see that thing glide over the sand, you know, it's just, to this day, that experience was just amazing to me. But it is an incredible, I mean, at night it gets down to 111. I was there in August the first time.
Oh, wow.
It was to do a look for a specific bird, but.
What were you looking for?
I was looking for it was a thrasher. I was like a Lacan thrasher. And you best saw it in this one place. You got there at dawn, and they perched up on top of bushes that were scattered throughout the desert. But in the meantime, you're seeing everything else. I mean, there's a whole culture. There are people living off the grid in like trailers in the middle of nowhere. And visiting the Salton Sea.
You did?
Yes. Yeah. And that was...
Yeah, that's where people are really living off the grid around.
Oh, my
there
God.
Too. Yeah.
And that was wild. And unfortunately, it's not. It's a shadow of its former self now.
Yeah.
But you populate your poetry with lots of birds and animals and plants, and I just love that. And the colors. That was the other thing. The colors were just so interesting.
I'm really interested in the way that the landscape around us, what's around us, whether it's cityscape or landscape, influences the way that we feel, the rhythms of our perception.
For you, though, I have to believe you were born there. Therefore, it's really part of the deep part of you is the Mojave.
Yeah, I believe it too. And when I'm there, all of my mother's stories and the landscape itself, I feel like I'm seeing it through her eyes. And
Wow.
She taught me how to see it.
That's what it sounded like. I gleaned that from this book, from Mojave Ghost. That was one of those great experiences. So many people have antagonistic relationships with their parents. And it was just so amazing to read this positive experience that obviously made you who you are.
Yeah, my mother made me who I am. I miss her. I miss her a lot. I didn't go through my adolescence without the usual
rebellion
hostilities between us, right?
Yeah, it's amazing how often that happens, and so it really must be in our DNA.
Surely it is. Yeah.
So it's great if you have not so great parents, because then you actually have a real reason to be an ass. But when you
yeah, but otherwise you regret it, as you know.
Right, later you'll feel really bad about it.
Yeah,
that's just amazing. Now
I love you talking about the sidewinders. Those are just amazing, and the marks that they leave. And
oh yeah, isn't that incredible? It's just, but the fact that they're sort of gliding sideways, they're facing you, but they're going to the right.
And lifting their whole coil in a weird wavy way.
And it's making minimal contact with the sand. It's just gliding. Yeah, that's really special. Did you find when you went to these other deserts, every desert must have its own character?
Of course it does. Yeah. The Atacama is one of the driest places in the world. And there are lots of lots of observatories there because it's so clear. But the desert there is full of really fragrant flowers that bloom at night.
Wow. Doesn't it also have giant petroglyphs that you can only see from the sky?
Yeah. Well, that's, I think, are you talking about the Nazca?
Yeah. Is that the Atacama?
Lines? That's closer to Peru. It wasn't in the northern part of the Atacama where I was.
All right.
Yeah. But those are amazing, right? That they used to, there was a book about, you know, they had to have been put there by Martians.
No, they were actually people.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the more amazing thing. Martians would be boring.
Figure out how. Yeah.
That's like incredible. Have you ever been to a rainforest?
Yeah, I've been to Costa Rica. And,
Like, talk to me about how you felt entering a rainforest as opposed to a desert. I mean, how did it feel viscerally for you?
Really dense. You know, it's the loss of view of the horizon we have in the desert, the loss of any sort of long view is kind of compresses everything close around you. You only really see, and you see well, what's immediately around you. And that's usually, that itself is really full of camouflage things, you know, green snakes on green limbs.
Yeah.
You too? Have you spent time in?
Oh, lots. And I actually really passionate about rainforests because I grew up in New England. And there's forests, not rainforests, but there's forests all around. But I've talked to people who've moved to New England from a very flat Midwest, and they have the same reaction you did. I can't get the horizon that I'm used to. I can't see the big picture.
Yeah, the sky.
The weight of the sky.
That's
what I felt when I've been out in big open spaces. The sky is too damn big.
I love your phrasing, though. That's so interesting. It sort of connects with sculpture, the weight of the sky, the weight of what's out there.
See, you're used to it, but you know, we only get pieces of the sky. And especially if you spend a lot of time in the forest, you may not see the sky clearly at all. And but you go out. I remember I was between the Rockies. I forget where I was. I was in Colorado, way out on the big flat area, and I saw a tornado many miles away. And it ended up being it was a very serious tornado. It killed sheep because they had huge hailstones. And that sense of seeing things, I couldn't judge distances. I couldn't figure out how far away it was. It was tremendously far away. It was amazing. Hey, I want to ask you something totally off topic.
Okay.
You got the Pulitzer Award for this, the Pulitzer Prize for this. That's one of those things. People throw around that word, and they have no idea what it really means. How big a deal was that for you?
Well,
answer honestly.
Yeah. So it had two different, two contrasting points. You know, one, it was a big deal because it's often a matter of just luck. I was totally not expecting it. You know, I didn't even know it hadn't been chosen for the year. You know, friends called and said that they just heard it, and I thought they were joking me. You know, that because poetry has such a life at the margins of our culture, it's something that brings you a little out of the margins. But then on the other side was the fact that the person that I most wanted to share that with and the person that most would have been happy was the very person that I couldn't share it with. And so... So it was a very mixed feeling.
Interesting. And understandable. I mean, I get that. I get that. It's really shocking. So do you actually get a prize? Is there a physical award?
There's a physical award. It's a kind of little plaque that they give you. And it was fun to be there with Richard Powers, who is a friend who I've gone birding with in Texas, and and walking with here in California, and who's a just fantastic writer. And they have a ceremony at Columbia.
Nice.
And it's a big shindig.
Ooh, congratulations. I mean, it's one of those things. I think people read phrases like that and they have no idea what it means.
But
that's a huge deal. It's a huge freaking deal. We're almost out of time. I want to ask you, as a birder, what's your favorite bird that represents the Mojave, that really captures the Mojave?
Of course, the Roadrunner. It's such a charismatic bird, and you see it everywhere you go, and they're really active in the daytime. So that would be the most characteristic one.
But for you, your fave.
And for my fave, the indigo bunting is just a stunning bird, and when you see those in the desert, you always remember them
because of that blue.
Yeah,
I know, because the colors are in the desert are always sort of interesting, somewhat muted blends of reds and oranges and yellows, and then you see this blue thing. It's just incredible. What are you going to work on next for a project?
I'm working on a book of essays. In fact, I have a big essay on snakes.
We'll talk off mic about that. I have a story to tell you. But we're okay. Completely out of time. My guest tonight has been poet, translator, and writer of fiction and nonfiction, Forrest Gander. And we've been talking about his new book. I strongly recommend it, Mojave Ghost. Forrest, it's been a real pleasure.
Thanks so much, Mark. Really glad to talk to you.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.